Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Anne Ball, Christopher Jones-Cruz, and Katie Weaver. Later, John Russell and Alice Bryant will bring us this week's lesson in everyday grammar. But first, here is Anne Ball.
Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto has canceled a meeting with the new President of the United States, Donald Trump. The meeting had been planned for next week. Peña Nieto acted shortly after Trump posted on Twitter about plans for building a wall between Mexico and the U.S. Trump tweeted early Thursday, "If Mexico is unwilling to pay for the badly needed wall, then it would be better to cancel the upcoming meeting." Peña Nieto later tweeted, "This morning we informed the White House that I will not attend the work meeting planned for next Tuesday with at POTUS. POTUS stands for President of the United States." Trump administration official Sean Spicer said, "We'll look for a date to schedule something in the future." And he added, "We will keep the lines of communication open." Jorge Castañeda served as Mexico's Foreign Relations Secretary under its former administration. In his words, Peña Nieto has no other choice but to say, "I'm not going." Tensions have increased between the two countries since Trump launched his campaign in 2015. Trump had said immigrants from Mexico brought drugs and crime into the U.S. He promised to build a wall to stop them and said Mexico would pay for it. The new U.S. president has also blamed Mexico for taking jobs away from Americans. He wants to renegotiate the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA. Calling it a total disaster, he said it costs the U.S. as much as $60 billion each year in trade deficits to Mexico. On Wednesday, Trump signed an order to build the wall as Mexico's Foreign Minister Luis Videgaray arrived for a meeting with the White House staff. Republican leaders of the U.S. Congress estimated the cost of building the wall would be between $10 billion to $20 billion. Trump said the U.S. will finance the wall initially, but he said Mexico will repay the United States. "There will be a payment. It will be in a form, perhaps a complicated form," Trump said in an interview with ABC News. Late in the day, a White House spokesman said that Trump is calling for a 20% tax on imports from Mexico to pay for the wall. I'm Anne Ball. Thank you.
The Turkish government is preparing to reset its relationship with the United States under its new leadership. A Turkish official said the new administration of U.S. President Donald Trump will guard Turkey's sensitive position in the Middle East. Turkey's relationship with the U.S. was strained during Barack Obama's 8 years in office. Sime Itis writes about politics for the Turkish website Almanitor. He says people in Turkey think Trump will get the relationship between Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan and the U.S. back on track.
Trump is going to be more amenable towards the Erdogan government than many people assume. And I think this is what Ankara is relying on. Now, they have common enemies, and I think that they will try and concentrate on that. So,
Turkish political experts say the relationship was hurt by the U.S. offer of military support to Kurdish opposition forces in Syria. Turkish Prime Minister Binali Yildirim spoke recently about what the Trump government needs to do to reset the U.S. relationship with Turkey. Yildirim called first for the U.S. to surrender Turkish clergyman Fethullah Gulen. He is accused of inspiring last summer's failed attempt to forcibly remove Erdogan. Gulen lives in the United States. The prime minister also demanded that the U.S. end its support of the Syrian Kurdish group known as PYD. PYD is fighting against the Islamic State in the Syrian city of Raqqa. The Turkish government believes the PYD is also supporting Kurdish militant groups within Turkey. Attila Yisalada is an expert on Turkish politics and finance with the company Global Source Partners. He questioned the likelihood of Yildirim's conditions being met. He said the U.S. Department of Justice is responsible for sending or not sending Gulen back to Turkey. He said there is little Trump could do to make it happen faster. He also said that Rex Tillerson, Trump's nominee for Secretary of State, has defended the Kurds as allies in the fight against the Islamic State. Politics observer Sime Itis also said Turks should lower their expectations for a renewed relationship with the U.S. But he said there is still some reason for optimism. He said many people thought Barack Obama's election would heal all of the problems in the Middle East, but it did not work out that way. Itis thinks people will be disappointed with the Trump administration, but that there will be some change.
So I think that is what really a lot of people are looking for, rather than any sort of panacea or a magic wand that will fix everything overnight.
There are other issues that may continue to strain the U.S. relationship with Turkey. They include the possible move of the U.S. embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Trump's support of Israeli settlements in the West Bank, and plans for U.S. use of the Turkish airbase in Izmir. Erdogan recently said, "We keep hearing words from Trump about the Middle East that are actually disturbing." And expert Attila Yesilada called it foolish for Turkey to believe that Trump is pro-Turkish only because he is seen as anti-Obama.
People in the city of Mosul have set up a market on a broken bridge. The bridge is one of several damaged or destroyed in fighting between Iraqi government troops and Islamic State militants. Government troops now control almost all of Mosul east of the Tigris River. 16-year-old Ahmed says the militants blew up most or all of the bridges before the army arrived. Maybe it was strategic, but I think they just wanted to destroy things. The market opened just a few days after IS militants were forced out of the area 2 weeks ago. Helicopters still attack militants in some nearby neighborhoods. Smoke can be seen rising from airstrikes and shells exploding. But the market continues to grow. A man named Mohammed sells dairy products, frozen chickens, and bottled water on the bridge. "I didn't choose to stay and live under Islamic State rule," he says. "But where else would I go?" Mohammed is joined by others selling fruit, credit for telephone service, cleaning products, and other goods. On the street near the bridge, people sell fuel, snack foods, cigarettes, and other things. Groups of young men sell vegetables. Another young man sells containers filled with cooking gas. Over the past few months of IS rule, prices in Mosul rose sharply. Food and fuel prices were 5 to 15 times their usual level. The increases harmed many people in Mosul. Prices are now back to normal. But people say they and others have little money to spend. People selling goods on the bridge say they are much happier now than they were in the past few months. They say the militants became cruel as Iraqi army troops moved closer to the city. A young man says he helps people move goods from place to place using his wooden cart. He says he earns $8 to $12 a day for this service. Carts like his must be used because automobiles are banned in areas of the city controlled by government forces. That is because troops fear the vehicles will be used by suicide bombers. But Iraqis are still moving around the city. Some of them are returning to the homes from which they fled. Others are fleeing Mosul, and many people are searching for supplies after many months or even years of isolation. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
When Michael Sheehan spoke at St. Anselm College in 2016, he asked students to thank their parents for making their college education possible. At his request, graduates of the New Hampshire school stood and cheered their parents. "That was beautiful," said Sheehan, a top official of the Boston Globe newspaper. "Now maybe Mom and Dad won't mind so much when you move back in with them." The college graduates and their parents laughed. But Sheehan's words hold much truth. In the United States, lots of young adults are living at home with their parents, according to the Pew Research Center. Pew researchers found that 32% of 18 to 34-year-old Americans lived at their parents' home in 2014. That is the highest percentage nationwide since 1940. More young adults lived at home with their parents than lived with a husband, wife, or partner in 2014, the center said. In that year, 31% were married or living with a partner, half what it was in 1960, it said. Hannah Rains plans to move back in with her parents after she completes her study program at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville. The 21-year-old would like to get a job and save money for graduate school. Rains's parents, Jim and Julie, already have experience with an adult child returning home. Hannah's twin brother, Dakota, returned home last year after the building where he lived was put up for sale. It was very natural, Julie Rains said. She said having their adult children back at home is good for her and her husband. It wasn't anything I had to think about, Rains said. The only problem is figuring out where all four family members should park their cars, she noted. Experts say younger Americans are experiencing different economic problems than earlier generations. Pay is not keeping up with housing costs, or the bigger loans many graduating students must pay off after leaving school. Pavel Marceau is an economic expert with Euromonitor International, a market research company. He said, moving home for young adults may be a good decision. They can live at home with no or low rental payments, he said. This will enable them to save money or pay down loans. It can also help aging parents deal with changing technology, Marceau said. Not everyone who has returned home to live with one or both parents is struggling with their careers. Damon Casares is a photographer. He took pictures of his peers for the New York Times Magazine in 2014. But even with selling his photos to the New York Times and other successes, he needed to return home to save money. Saving is necessary so he can repay $120,000 in loans that went toward his studies at the Art Center College of Design in California. He said, "If I didn't have that loan, I'd easily be able to live on my own somewhere comfortably." Casares said he is happy about his education, even with the high cost. His father wanted to go to art school to study painting, but never got the chance. He said his mother also did not get to go to college. Both parents wanted him to get a good education to move forward with his career goals, Casares said. Another young adult who recently moved back home is Giovanna Tolda of Northampton, Massachusetts. The 31-year-old is completing a master's degree in special education. Tolda said her parents were glad to have her back home. While Tolda is back at home, she said her parents are talking to her about ways to buy a house after graduation instead of renting one. Her own goals include a doctorate degree program in education, a job as a special education administrator, and, yes, owning her own home. I'm Katie Weaver.
This is What's Trending Today. Professional athletes in most sports start to slow down after the age of 35. But on Thursday, Serena Williams earned a spot in the Australian Open finals. She will face her older sister, Venus, who won her semifinal match a day earlier. It is the first time the Williams sisters will play in a Grand Slam final since 2009. Venus is 36. Serena is 35. One older champion will play in the men's final, too. Roger Federer qualified for the final by defeating Stan Wawrinka. Federer, like Serena Williams, is 35 years old. It will be one of the sport's oldest tournament finals in a long time. Ken Rosewall of Australia is the oldest winner of a Grand Slam. He was 37 when he won the Australian Open in 1972. Serena Williams is already the oldest winner of a women's Grand Slam tournament. She won Wimbledon last year at the age of 34. Many people are impressed that three of the finalists are 35 or older. And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
Imagine you are at a cafe in the United States. The server walks toward you and asks the following question.
Did you want cream for your coffee?
You might ask yourself how you should answer. What is the server talking about? Why did the server use a past tense construction? Did you want? Why did the server not say, do you want cream for your coffee? In today's Everyday Grammar, we will try to solve a mystery. Why do some Americans use the past tense when they are talking about the present?
The simple past tense is used for actions or situations that happened in the past. These actions or situations are finished. For example, you might hear a person say, "Did you have a good weekend?" When they ask this question, they are using the past tense construction, "Did you have?" and they are clearly discussing a recent weekend that is now finished. They might ask such a question when they see you on Monday or Tuesday when you are back at work or school, for example. The traditional use of the simple past tense is this: to note complete actions or situations in the past. This definition is true most of the time in English conversation.
However, there are exceptions. For example, in conversation, Americans often use the simple past tense of the verbs want or need, even though they are asking a question about the present. Let's go back to the American cafe. You might hear a conversation such as this.
Did you want cream for your coffee?
No, thanks.
Did you need more water?
Yes, please. In the conversation, the server uses the simple past tense when asking questions. It would be grammatically correct to say, "Do you want cream for your coffee?" or "Do you need more water?" So, why did the server use the simple past tense instead of the present tense?
Susan Conrad and Douglas Biber are grammar experts. They say that different cultures have different rules about politeness. In American culture, it is often considered polite to speak indirectly. One way some Americans speak indirectly, Conrad and Biber say, is by using a past tense verb when asking about a present desire. Americans do this by using the construction did plus want and did plus need. Even close friends may use this polite form with each other. When they are asking about what another person wants to do, some Americans say, "Did you want to go to the concert?" instead of, "Do you want to go to the concert?" However, speakers do not answer such questions in the simple past tense. The answer usually comes in the verb forms that you would expect: a simple present, present progressive, or future tense verb, for example. Consider one of our example sentences. Did you want to go to the concert? The response to this question could be in the simple present tense.
No, I don't want to.
Or the response could be in the present progressive.
No, I'm watching a movie.
Or the answer could be in the future tense.
Yes, I'll go to the concert.
You can read more about these verb forms in previous Everyday Grammar stories.
We started this program with a question. Why do some Americans use the past tense when talking about the present? We have discovered that Americans generally only do this when asking about a present desire or preference, and usually only with the verbs want and need. In general, Americans do not use the simple past in this way when they are asking for information or using other verbs such as like, love, prefer, and so on. This lesson is not designed to give you yet another grammar rule to remember. The point is to show you that native speakers will use language in ways that do not always follow the grammatical definitions that you may have learned about. Today's lesson will be useful if you are ever listening or speaking to an American. You might be able to ask polite questions or understand what Americans mean when they ask you a question.
Remember, we have talked about a grammatical structure that you might hear or use in conversation. It does not follow the traditional rules of grammar, so we do not advise that you use it on your next English grammar test. I'm Alice Bryant.
And I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.